This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's the 19th of September. Happy White Camellia Day. Today marks 125 years since all New Zealand women gained the right to vote. We're marking this occasion by playing this historical program which details the build-up in personalities involved in this push for women's suffrage. This program was compiled by Ruth Todd and Nikki Rees and first aired in 1993, the centenary of women's suffrage.
Can you remember the day that you first voted?
Oh, yes. In Howrah, we were rather excited at the idea of, that we had the franchise and were able to vote. My sisters and I went with Father to vote. I can't remember who was the returning officer at that time. I've just forgotten. But I know it was in Howrah, about 1893.
Well, do you think, Mrs. Hills, that most of the women who voted in those days voted because they felt a responsibility, or did they just vote for the novelty?
Oh, I think the majority voted for the responsibility. But a great many women didn't vote. They weren't interested. A great many were not, and their husbands didn't help them to be interested. They thought the women, it was too important a thing for women to bother about, that the men could manage
the country.
Mm. Yes. But the women voted for their families.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts grey.
Miss McDonnell, you say that temperance and the franchise went hand in hand in New Zealand then.
Yes, it did. It went because the Wesleyans were all out for prohibition. The Wesleyans fought mad for prohibition. And so they helped the women get the franchise because they knew once women got the franchise, the liquor laws would be altered. Oh, it was an exciting time, let me tell you. I think women wouldn't have got the franchise when they did, only for the Wesleyans working so hard on the temperance question.
Oh, temperance, my good angel. Oh, temperance, where have you gone? You made us sing with exultation. You made our eyes brightly to shine. Our women folk rose up like thunder, and with fervor struck out the top line. And even the men down under tipped out their beer, brandy and wine. Oh, temperance, my good angel. Oh, temperance, where have you gone?
But the men didn't like it. They didn't like their wives, their daughters voting.
No, they said their wives didn't want it. Their wives were quite content. But my own father said, my wife is content to be as she is. And my mother said, but I'm not. So we had a row home over that. Oh, I think it was quite exciting, you know.
Would many women have your mother's ideas on the vote?
No, not many. They were women in those days were a bit bound down, you know. They've only gained their freedom since the war, if you want to know.
Well, and you and your mother went against your father's wishes and voted.
Yes, we all voted. We all became prohibitionists. Don't know if I ever kept it up. But, you say, well, when I vote prohibition. And we all did. Not so much to have the liquor prohibited as to keep it in check, as to get laws for closing hours and all that sort of thing. And the age of people that should vote.
Do you think that it helped the women to gain the vote? Did it help them in their home life?
Certainly it would. Men couldn't come home and demand money from them. A woman couldn't keep any money in a bank. If her husband wanted that money, he could have it.
The same laws as were in England, that a wife's property became her husband's when they married. Is it the same thing here?
The same here. Hmm. All came slowly, a little bit, you know, at a time. But they had no women had no say in property or anything. It was dreadful the way they were treated.
Just think what it will do, dear sirs, when woman says what's yours is hers. She'll wear the pants, she'll grow a beard. A hairy woman's to be feared. She'll be the Pope, she'll rule the world. The mere thought makes me shiver. And when I come home late at night, she won't have cooked me dinner.
Don't demand the vote, my dears. Leave it to your spouse. A woman's place is in the home.
And nowhere.
The house.
A woman is a flighty thing, she wasn't made to vote. She'd rather sweep and sew and cook and scrub and wipe and sing sweet notes. Her head is pretty empty, just thinking makes her faint. She's just not like the rest of us, she's practically a saint.
Don't demand the vote, my dears. Leave it to your spouse. A woman's place is in the home.
And nowhere,
near the. Don't demand the vote, my dears. Leave it to your spouse. A woman's place is in the home.
And nowhere.
New Zealand wasn't the only country in the world fighting for women's franchise in the late 19th century. To tell us what was happening at this time, we asked Dame Anne Hercus. Dame Anne entered Parliament in 1978 and set up the first Ministry of Women's Affairs in New Zealand in 1985. Between 1984 and 87, she was also Minister of Social Welfare and Police. She resigned from Parliament in 1987, and 2 years later, in 1989, was asked to be New Zealand Ambassador to the United Nations, where she stayed for a term of 2 years.
Why were we the very first self-governing country in the world to give women, all women, Māori and Pākehā women, and that in itself was unique, the vote 100 years ago? Why this little country at the bottom right-hand corner of the map? Well, first, we didn't exactly do it on our own. There was an international suffrage campaign, mainly in Mother Britain and also in the United States of America. And from those centres, that international campaign found its influence into the colonies, of which we were one. For example, the first petition to Parliament in Britain was in 1866, 30 years before we got the vote. And you would know, I think, about the story of women getting the vote in Britain, how they were so far behind us and how they got so impatient with years of struggle that the very radical activities of the Pankhursts in the early part of this century were felt to be absolutely essential. But we were so far ahead of Mother Britain. Why? Or in the United States of America, where the suffrage movement was very much part of the anti-slavery movement. And when the blacks were given the vote after the Civil War, men, of course, American women found it absolutely unbelievable that they should not be given the same right, but they weren't. So they had an identical goal to us. And there are special connections, not with Britain, but with Australia and the United States of America, in that the temperance movement in all three countries played a very important part in the struggle for the vote. Many, many women and men joined that battle because they did so in order to try and right some wrongs they saw in society and check the evils and the excesses of the liquor trade of the time. So I think one has to say that we were part of an international campaign and clearly drew some strength from that connection. But it doesn't yet explain why we were first. And most people would agree there were some special New Zealand factors, something in the water that made it unique for us. New Zealand women in that period of time 100 years ago and earlier really had the low legal status of their counterpart sisters right round the world. Indeed, in any law book of the time, you would find the legal rights of women were so insignificant that they warranted only a tiny section, almost inevitably sandwiched in between the rights of lunatics and the rights of aliens. That's where we fitted in the legal scheme of thing. But in this new colony of New Zealand, there was change. Pioneer women who worked beside the men breaking in the land, and their absolute equality in that task, and their determination that their daughters in particular would have education opportunities that they had not had. And therefore it's not surprising, and no accident, that Kate Edgar graduated BA in New Zealand in 1877, one whole year before any British university even opened their doors to women, let alone graduated. There's another first. And also, I think it's interesting to note that by the time 1893 had arrived, half the university students were women. I didn't know that till I was told that the other day. In paid employment, many New Zealand women had deliberately chosen to be teachers so they could build for the next generation some educational goals. And then there were a few enlightened politicians of the time. And by the late 1800s, the law of the land had moved forward in ways that our sisters in other parts of the world marveled. For example, we were given as married women the right to hold property in our own right in 1884, the first again in the world. And so that woman's movement that settled on this enormously important goal of women getting the vote really had a fascinating and unique background stemming from those pioneer women who worked the land and those pioneer teachers who were determined that their daughters would get good education. And I think that is the key to why we were so early, why the suffrage issue blossomed here and was resolved relatively quickly. So by the 1880s, New Zealand women householders had got the right to vote for school boards and stand on them. They could involve themselves and vote in local body politics. They voted and stood for hospital boards. And if one thought about it, there was absolutely no reason why they shouldn't vote in the general election for parliaments. And listen to the voice of a woman of the time. "In seeking the franchise," she said, "women are not asking a favour, at asserting a right. Men claim the right to vote because they contribute to taxation of the country. Does not this apply to women? Does she not buy a boot and a bonnet without supporting revenue? Men claim a voice in framing the laws because they are bound to obey them. But the laws and their sanctions know no distinction of sex. What right is a man to claim that no one else shall make the laws for him, and then deny exactly the same claim to women? Amongst the male supporters of the cause were some of the great politicians of the day: Sir William Fox, Alfred Saunders, Robert Stout, Sir Julius Vogel, Sir George Grey, and Sir John Hall. It was most often in the temperance societies of the day, those mainstream church-based groups, that women served the kind of apprenticeship in campaigning, in educating communities, and in educating politicians that you and I would find enormously familiar. It is true it was the drink issue that often roused a particular response, because it was most often that women and their children suffered at the hands of a drunken husband. There was no non-molestation orders in those days. The drink issue also was a symbol of inequality. The drunk male who had a vote, the educated, hard-working woman who didn't. And some of the names, the roll call of women of that time, are familiar to us. Mrs. Dudley Wart, the wife of a judge. Miss Dalrymple, famous woman educator. Miss Kate Edgar, headmistress of Nelson Girls College. Mrs. Margaret Sivright, a former nurse who trained in Britain with Florence Nightingale. Stella Henderson, one of the first women law graduates in New Zealand. And her sister Elizabeth Henderson, later to be Elizabeth McCombs, the first woman member of Parliament. The list is a long one. And there were women who were really just like us. Women who worked in their communities, women by and large who were married, women who decided that this was an important cause. The central woman in this story is Kate Sheppard. Born Kate Malcolm in Scotland in 1848, she immigrated with her family in her early 20s to New Zealand and married a much older man, Christchurch businessman and city councillor Walter Sheppard. She was, from all accounts of her time, well educated, bright, very beautiful to look at, a graceful and a clear public speaker, and with great charm, which she didn't hesitate to use against the men if she felt that would get her way. She was a feminist and called herself a feminist from an early age. And her first really public job was within the Women's Christian Temperance Union to ensure that every branch throughout New Zealand had one person who was going to be in charge of what she called franchise agitation, to organize that branch in that direction, to give reports, and as she said, on whose shoulders praise or blame would lie for activity or lack of it. She wrote pamphlets, concise and clear. She recommended reading lists, and her Scottish Presbyterian blood made her very careful about how many pamphlets were printed and how they were distributed, which I think is lovely. She encouraged public debate and private meetings. She encouraged writing letters to the papers and articles. And those were the activities of Kate Sheppard and those thousands of other women who worked for women's suffrage.
That was Dame Anne Hercus, former Member of Parliament and former New Zealand representative to the United Nations. We're now going to take you back over 100 years ago to the events that led to New Zealand women gaining the vote in 1893.
Oh dear, what can the matter be? Dear, dear, what can the matter be? Women are wanting to vote. Women have husbands, they are
girls. No place for a girl out in the street.
She's much safer from drunkards on my bike than walking.
But look, look, I'm riding.
Your skirt, Matty.
Woo-hoo, it's caught in a chain.
Oh, I don't know what the world is coming to.
She didn't, but Mary Ann Muller of Blenheim did. In 1869, using the pen name Femina, she had written a pamphlet urging that women should have the vote.
Women are now educated, thinking beings. Go to our government schools. Are girls so far behind boys in intelligence there? Converse in society with girls of 16 or 20 and compare them with youths of their own age. Are they less sensible? I think I might even venture to assert that most girls of 18 are better informed upon many subjects of general information than their brothers are. Why has a woman no power to vote, no right to vote, when she happens to possess all the requisites which legally qualify a man for that right? Sex disqualifies her. The true position is that educated thinking members of the state are degraded below the level of the ploughman, who perhaps can neither read nor write. And this is law. Called justice. It's enough to make the angels weep. Our women are brave and strong, with an amount of self-reliance, courage and freedom from conventionalities, eminently calculated to form a great nation. Give them scope. More tea, dear?
No, Mary, not just now. I'm reading the most unreasoned document written by some anonymous woman, published locally, Nelson.
Oh. Perhaps you'd be good enough to let me see it. If it's about women, I should very much...
Absolutely no. I won't have you read this. It's my duty to protect you from this sort of scurrilousness. You are my wife. Oh, yes, sir. A very strong cup this time, Mary.
Mary Ann Muller's husband never did find out that she was Femina. In 1878, women's right to vote was debated in Parliament. Robert Stout, member for City of Dunedin East.
I can only say that I agree with that part of the bill that gives the franchise to women.
Mr. Seddon, member for Hooker
Tika. If the second reading of the bill is to affirm the principle that women are to go about electioneering, I shall, if I stand alone, divide against it. I will not have it said that the majority of the members of this house are under petticoat government. It will be said by and by that this is the petticoat government parliament. We shall have to look well to our laurels and assert our prerogative as lords of creation before law.
Rubbish!
I hope honourable members will, for their own good, not allow such a clause to be inserted in the bill. All domestic felicity would be destroyed once the ladies commenced to dabble in politics. Such being the case, I shall oppose any attempt made in the direction indicated by the honourable gentleman.
The member for Auckland, Mr. Wallace.
The principle which underlies my motion is that the two sexes are equal.
Right.
And therefore it is wrong to give one sex rights and privileges which are withheld from the other.
Yeah.
In advocating this great and good principle, I am greatly encouraged by what has already been done in New Zealand by way of redressing some of the wrongs of women and of securing to them some portion of the rights to which they are entitled. At present, we exclude women, and by excluding women from the public and political sphere, we deprive ourselves of the benefit, politically, of half the social forces of the community. Then, let us remove the electoral disabilities of women and extend to them the same political rights and privileges as we claim for ourselves. And if we do that, I believe that the benefits which must accrue to society will be incalculably great.
Mr. Cutton, member for Tyre.
Fancy the state of things that would result. Instead of our coming here to legislate, we should be left at home to look after the babies, and the ladies would become the legislators. Well, they have neither the personal courage nor the physical strength which is necessary for the person who wished to be a legislator.
Of course.
It is not natural. Their constitutions are not fitted for it. And it cannot be expected they will ever take a position in the front rank.
The bill failed. Somewhere in New Zealand, later in the 1880s.
Matty, do you want more tea?
Oh, look here in your father's newspaper. An article about a lady bicyclist. The machine ridden by Mrs. Brooks is specially made for a lady and obviates the necessity for the bifurcated costume or even divided skirt. Sarah, are you listening? You're always fosking around in some drawer or other.
There's this little pamphlet here. Got it. On dress reform. See? We don't have to wear these heavy skirts.
Oh, I like this bit. In New Zealand, we find courageous women in ones and twos and threes who have more or less completely thrown the old order to the winds, who work and walk and ride and cycle and play tennis and even pay their calls in knicker dress.
What's a knicker dress?
Bifurcated skirt, silly. Listen to this. Unsuitable dress, we believe, the chief cause preventing schoolgirls from acquiring that physical vigour, which, in the case of boys, enables them, after leaving school, to take a strong, active part in what goes on around them.
Oh, look. Imagine mother in that. It says, women feel a delightful freedom, an immediate desire for active, muscular exercise upon putting on the knicker costume.
It's so quiet, isn't it?
Maddie, what work do you want to take up now you've finished school?
Oh, I'll get married.
To a rich man. He'll probably be a drunkard and you'll have 9 bairns and no money and you'll not even be able to get a divorce.
Don't be so horrible.
Well, it's true. You can't divorce your husband. I'm scared of marriage because of that. You're clever, Maddie. You could be a teacher or a journalist. A nurse, even.
I don't know. I just know I don't want to be a lady help.
Heavens, no.
I want to come home every day. I want to be free.
Matty, have you read this old Femina pamphlet?
No. Very dull.
More tea, Matty.
Tea? No more tea. I want something more than tea in my life. I want to leave school and bike and vote and work.
When Matty and Sarah were young women, well over 45,000 women were classed as wage earners. None of these women could vote. Excerpts from the report of the 1890 Sweating Commission.
I'm employed at Clark's Steam Laundry in the North East Valley. We have pretty long hours, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. We've only half an hour for dinner. Our hours are the same on Saturdays.
I am employed ironing shirts. The irons weigh 9 or 10 pounds. There are young lassies working there. Two of them are about 12 years of age and all work the same hours.
I was a domestic servant. I was allowed one night a week off. My wages were 9 shillings a week. I commenced work at 6:30 a.m.
The system in operation in our dressmaking room is to engage apprentices for the first year for nothing. After that, they get 4 shillings per week, and in other places, not so much.
I'm an assistant in a drapery establishment. We have no chairs for assistants, nor are assistants allowed to sit down during business hours.
I am Harriet Morrison, Vice President of the Tailoresses Union. I am a tailoress. Working ordinary hours in the factory, the girls earn 2 shillings 6 pence per day. When they take work home, perhaps they could make an extra shilling. Including both day and night work, they could earn 3 shillings 4 pence, not including Saturday. This was previous to the establishment of the union. They work overtime in the factories in order to make a bare living. Some work in their meal hours. They work at home till about 12 o'clock at night. In my opinion, it is the reckless competition of manufacturers that has brought down the wages so low. I estimate that a girl's board costs 13 shillings to 14 shillings.
When Matty and Sarah were in their 20s, there was one pub for every 51 adults in New Zealand. Drunkenness was rife.
Hey, look out, Bill. Here's your missus.
Matty!
And what can I do for you, ma'am? Come to be a barmaid.
Have you seen my husband, Bill?
No, he signed the pledge, isn't he?
Excuse me. Have you seen... Eva, quiet.
Nah, try Mackay's pub.
Well, where's that?
Another round over here! Can't help you, ma'am. Sorry.
Wasn't he there, love?
I've been everywhere. It's payday, there'll be none left for us.
There, there. Go to our booth over there. Take your beans. Get some hot soup in yourself.
Thank you. Oh. Sarah!
Matty! It's been 5 years. Oh. What's happened to you?
Oh, well, are you back in town now?
Yes, I've had to give up teaching. I'm looking after my parents. Oh, Matty, are you all right?
Drink warms your heart until the next morning when you swear you'll never start again. I'm tired of searching every Saturday night for my man so full of beer that he wants a free fight.
Fill her up, boys, we'll drink the pub dry. There's whiskey and beer for the taking. Now pour him again, Jack, I'm not going home. Cause a drink makes a man feel like living.
Our children are hungry, they don't understand. When you come home angry and free with your hands. I'm not in the union that says drink won't be missed. I am a woman who needs a better life than this.
Fill her up, boys, we'll drink the pub dry. There's whiskey and beer for the taking. Now pour him again, Jack, I'm not going home. Cause this drink makes a man feel like living.
Pour him again, Jack, I'm not going home. Cause his drink makes a man feel like living.
In 1885, Mrs. Mary Levitt, a representative of the Women's Christian Temperance Union in the United States, lectured in New Zealand.
Let men and women be treated alike. That is all I wish. Some say that women would bring confusion into government, but I say that there is considerable confusion there already. The present system classes women with children, idiots, and criminals, who are the only other classes incapable of voting.
The Women's Christian Temperance Union started branches all over the country. Mrs. Shepherd, what led you to take up the work in connection with the obtaining of the franchise?
It was the fact of being hampered and hindered in various departments of work that led me to so ardently long for a vote. In 1887, I was appointed by the Women's Christian Temperance Union as franchise superintendent for New Zealand, and have retained that office through re-election year by year ever since. Thank you. It is a great honour to me to be appointed franchise superintendent. I'd like to read a pamphlet that will be available soon. It's called 10 Reasons Why the Women of New Zealand Should Vote. Here. Item 1, because a democratic government like that of New Zealand already admits the great principle that every adult person, not convicted of crime nor suspected of lunacy, has an inherent right to a voice in the construction of laws which all must obey. Item 2, because it has not yet been proved that the intelligence of women is only...
In 1887, Sir Julius Vogel introduced a woman's suffrage bill in Parliament. Mr. Stewart, member for Dunedin West.
We know that in many universities women are admitted to take degrees.
By degrees,
sir. Right, denied them for a considerable time, and which is denied them in some places still.
Yes, fair enough.
We know also that in medicine they were looked upon as being altogether out of their element. And what is now the case? Very distinguished women do practice medicine, and have rendered very considerable services.
Sit down, Florence Nightingale.
The same with regard to preaching and lecturing. It was said, it's a heresy to allow women to preach or lecture. Now we see that almost every day, and we know that women possess as much knowledge on these various subjects as is possessed by men. Take also the sphere of literature.
Now take all women.
As historians, novelists, biographers, in philosophy and poetry, women have occupied very distinguished places within the last 50 years.
Name three.
Mr. Perry, the member for Eastern Mali.
I am afraid if ladies were allowed seats in this house, it would distract the attention of some honorable members, and they would not pay so much attention to the affairs of the colony as they would otherwise do. Although I am getting up in years, I must confess I should be affected by a weakness of that sort. If the honourable gentleman in charge of this bill would introduce a clause providing that only a plain woman should be allowed to come into the house, I think the source of danger would be removed. But if any beautiful ladies were sent to this house, I am quite sure they would lead astray the tender hearts of some honourable gentlemen, particularly the elder members of the House. I say in conclusion that if attractive ladies are allowed to come into this house, I am quite certain my own wife will never consent to my returning here.
Mr. Monk, member for Waitemata.
If there is anything of which I should be proud, it is the fact that I am a member of the legislature in which a question of this kind is first introduced. If there is anything that would give me confidence and hope in the future legislation of this country, it is that women are to be allowed and to be solicited to use their good influence in returning members to this House. Indeed, If I did not feel proud at the prospect of the influence that they will have in this colony, I should be very much fossilized.
I would recommend...
Why are we educating our women up to the standard to which we are now trying to take them? Is it not that they may be placed side by side with ourselves in influencing the laws of the country?
This is scandalous!
Otago Daily Times, 16th of May, 1887.
We suppose there is no fear of the female suffrage extension bill being carried further, else it would be a serious matter. When the women of New Zealand show, in the usual way, they are desirous of the suffrage, it will be time to discuss the matter at length.
You stand here, Matty, and hand out the leaflets as the women come out of the factory gates. I'll be over the road trying to pin the notice on the tree again. Good luck.
Oh, is it Sarah? Someone says here, in the newspaper, when the women of New Zealand show in the usual way they are desirous of the suffrage... What is the usual way?
Voting.
Oh.
I suppose it's not really funny, though.
No.
There's you with three children to support and...
Oh, I was so glad he went to Australia, Sarah. We're better off without him. I don't mind working in the shop.
Yes.
Mr. Lance, member for Cheviot.
The woman might vote against her husband or brother, as the case may be. The consequence of that might be that the husband, in an ungovernable fury, might wring his good wife's neck like a chicken. And a jury of 12 men would probably bring in a verdict of justifiable homicide. And 9/10 of the people would agree with that verdict. I do not believe the women of New Zealand, if the question was put to them, would support it.
Mr. Bruce, member for Rangitiki.
I have gone to some trouble to ascertain the views of women on this subject, and I found them nearly all hostile to the bill. I should vote against the second reading of this bill.
The bill passed its second reading by 41 to 22, but was defeated in committee 21 to 19 in the middle of the night when the numbers were favourable to the opponents. Kate Shepherd had to find allies inside Parliament for her cause. She wrote to Sir John Hall on the 5th of June 1888.
As the new electoral bill will shortly be discussed in the House, the members of the Union throughout New Zealand are of the opinion that we should make an appeal to Parliament, urging that the women of New Zealand be allowed to have a voice in the choice of legislators who construct the laws which we, in common with the other sex, are expected to obey. As we understand that you are in favour of extending the franchise to women, we shall feel grateful if you will kindly present our petition when the bill comes before the House. We have a faint hope that the little sentence among the interpretation clauses which reads thus, persons does not include female, may be expunged if some influential member like yourself would propose it.
For the next 5 years, Sir John Hall voiced the views of the Women's Christian Temperance Union in Parliament and advised the Union on how to proceed.
Come into our temperance meeting, starting in 5 minutes.
Hi, Matty. Your bens are all asleep. Paul Peach is listening out for them.
Oh, thanks, Sarah.
Well, have a good meeting. I can't stay. I've got 3 shirts to make before bedtime.
Harriet Morrison says you shouldn't take work home.
How else can I earn some money? Mother's very frail now. I have to be with her. She's still shocked by Father's passing away and all those debts he left. Bye.
Bye.
Women's Christian Temperance Union meeting, starting soon.
Miss Nicol?
I propose
propose that this meeting of women pledge themselves to arouse an interest in favour of female suffrage.
Oh, yes.
I second that proposal, and the women of the colony should now band together and show Parliament we are not to be trifled with. Let us now have a monster petition prepared before next session for presentation to Parliament, and let us put our shoulders to the wheel, resting our trust in the Lord.
I'd like to close this meeting now. Any ladies willing to take petitions round the town, would you gather by the tier?
1890. Sir John Hall, member for Selwyn.
I beg to move the following amendment. That, in the opinion of this House, the right of voting at the election of members of the House of Representatives should be extended to women. The supporters of female suffrage ought not, I submit, to be called on to show why women should have the right to vote. It ought rather be for their opponents to show why women should not vote.
Miss Harriet Morrison.
It is time that women put in a word to say who should govern them. It is time she escaped bondage.
Yes.
The emancipation of woman is gaining ground every day. It is making its way in great strides.
Yes, indeed.
Some say that women do not want the franchise. I very decidedly and very distinctly say that women do want the franchise. And I move that the women of this colony desire and are entitled to have an equal voice with men in the settlement of social and political questions in their community. Many reforms are wanted amongst working women, and we would like to have a voice in the return of members to Parliament who will look faithfully after our interests. One of the strongest arguments I
Member for Dunedin, Mr. Fish.
Thank you. I absolutely deny, without a fear of contradiction, that any considerable section of women in this country have asked for or desire to obtain the privilege of voting at elections. What endears woman to man? What makes men respect women and love them as they do? Well, it is their attention to their domestic duties and the devotion and the love they bear to their husbands. These are the qualities that endear woman to man. And by the introduction of political questions among women, you will go far, in my humble judgment, to destroy the chiefest charms of love and kindness, which ought to and do exist in the majority of families as between the husband and the wife. And then, sir, there is the family aspect of the case. Now, just fancy a man coming home in the evening after a hard day's work, tired if he be an artisan, or weary with the worries of today if he be a merchant or tradesman, and finding his parlour or drawing room, as the case may be, filled with a lot of noisy or declamatory women. Yes, and women can be noisy and declamatory when they like. Certainly, yeah, talking politics and a man's dinner entirely neglected. Let us picture the scene of social and domestic discomfort which would follow that, eh? What? Now, where a man is possessed of a good wife and obedient children, both wife and daughters would vote exactly as he told them.
Yeah, well,
an honourable gentleman behind me says no. Well, I, fortunately, have a wife who would vote as I told her, and that is what any good wife would do.
Oh, same.
Exactly.
Order, Mr. Monk.
You must not let that go to Hanson.
Oh, yes.
Maud Reeves to Sir John Hall, 8th of August, 1890.
Dear Sir John, I must congratulate you on the success of your amendment. I regard it as an honour to the cause that men like Mr. Fish oppose it. As far as I am concerned, they may make women out to be as inferior as they like as long as we get our vote. As far as women's not wanting the franchise goes, I can only say that most of the females I come in contact with are intensely anxious for it, and others only require to know it is possible for them to get it, to be quite as anxious in their minds.
Kate Shepherd to Lady Hall, 29th of September, 1890.
Dear Madam, our members will esteem it a great favour if you will kindly be the first to sign your name to our Women's Franchise Petition, a copy of which I am posting today. And if we might ask you a further favour, it would be that you should induce some of your lady friends to sign it also. I am posting petition forms to Auckland, Nelson, Napier, Wellington, Dunedin, and Invercargill, besides to our auxiliary unions in the smaller county towns. We are earnestly hoping to have a large number of names before Parliament meets again, so that no one will be able to say in the future that the women of New Zealand don't want the franchise. Believe me, dear madam, yours truly, K.W. Shepherd, National Superintendent.
Edith G. Jagger.
Annie Emma Hookham.
May Rose Jagger.
Madeline Warden.
Marion A.
Letter from Helen Nicol, Dunedin Evening Star, 2nd of October, 1890.
To the editor. We are happy to say that we are now in possession of the petitions, which will soon be in circulation, when we hope all sensible women who are desirous of having our country governed by good, pure and noble men, especially men of good moral character, will sign the petitions. I do earnestly trust that every one of my sisters will use her vote for the banishment of all unjust laws affecting women. Women's franchise will do more for the working class than any combination of unions will ever manage. Let working men instruct their wives to work for the woman's franchise. Let every working man's wife come to our next public meeting and bring her husband too, for our next will be for both sexes. Have nothing to do with a man who will vote against us having the right to use a privilege that is already theirs, who are not idiots or insane.
Ellen Atkinson.
Amy Mears.
Kate Spencer Ivans.
Fanny Sheard.
Marion Hooker.
Our women citizens!
Yes, when they're required to pay taxes!
No, when they ask to vote!
Does the law concern women?
Yes, when they're required to obey it!
No, when they ask to have a voice in the representation of the country!
Ellen Leach. Fanny Worsley.
Helen Estelle Worsley.
Mary J. Cotton.
1891. The Liberals were in power. John Balance was Premier. Mr. Fish was still making speeches in Parliament.
If the men should see the women going to the polls, to put down the leak in traffic, need it begs their souls. If we're angels as they tell us, can we once suppose that all the men should frown on us?
Priscilla Marshall, Margaret.
In 1892 and 3, even larger petitions were presented. Suffrage bills were debated in Parliament and campaigning continued.
"16 reasons for supporting women's suffrage. One, because it is the foundation of all political liberty, that those who obey the law should be able to have a voice in choosing those who make the law. Two, because Parliament should be the reflection of the wishes of the people. Three, because a government of the people, by the people and for the people, should mean all the people and not one half. Four, because most laws affect women as much as men, and some laws affect women especially. 14, because large numbers of intelligent, thoughtful, hard-working women deserve the franchise.
Hear him.
And 16, because, to sum up all the reasons in one, it is just.
We have had no proof whatever that the women of this colony desire to have the franchise. We have had assertions, but we have had no proof. I go further and say that a majority of the women of New Zealand do not want this franchise.
May Rose Jagger.
Madeline Warden.
Marion Ada Hookham.
Alice T. Bill.
1891. Eight suffrage petitions were presented to Parliament carrying 10,000 signatures. 1892, a 20,000 signature petition was presented to Parliament by Sir John Hall. 1893, petitions totalling over 30,000 signatures, or 300 yards of them, were unrolled in Parliament.
Mary J. Carpenter,
Annie Gilberthorpe,
Suzanne Clarkson,
Julia H. And still in Parliament, the Honourable Sir G.S. Whitmore could say...
The fact of 30,000 women, all drawn from the towns, probably the greater proportion of them from the tailoresses' unions and women of the working class in the towns, with a few of the women's rights women added, having signed a petition, does not appear to me to be any proof at all that the women of the country want it.
They talk about a woman's sphere as though it had a limit.
There's not a place in earth or heaven.
There's not a task to mankind given.
There's not a blessing or a woe.
There's not a whisper, yes or no.
There's not a life or death or birth that has a feather's weight of worth
without a woman in it. Hey!
April 1893, Balance died. Seddon became leader. Hall wrote to Mrs. Kate Shepherd.
He really wants to defeat women's franchise, and he is very cunning. There is no knowing in what way he might turn or twist anything you say to him.
28th of July 1893, Sir John Hall presented the last major petition to Parliament.
Edith G. Jagger,
Annie Emma Hookham. May Rose.
From Hansard. Sir John Hall presented a number of petitions from women of the age of 21 years and upwards in favour of the extension of the franchise to women and of their being allowed to vote at the next election. Amongst others was one bearing the signatures of 25,519 women of 21 years and upwards. He might say that his was the most numerously signed petition that had ever been presented to that house or in any of the Australian colonies. He had much pleasure, and he esteemed it a great honour in presenting this petition.
Edith Atkinson.
Ellen Atkinson.
Amy Mears.
Kate Spencer Ivans.
Fanny Sheard.
The electoral bill passed through the House of Representatives with only two members voting against it. One was Mr. Fish. It passed in the Legislative Council by a majority of two on September the 8th, 1893.
The men didn't like it. They didn't like their wives, their daughters voting.
No, they said their wives didn't want it. Their wives were quite content to be. My own father said, my wife is content to be as she is. And my mother said, but I'm not. So we had a round home over there. Oh, I think it was quite exciting, you know. Oh, old Seddon didn't want it, you know. He didn't. He put everything he could against it. And the old hypocrite, when the whole thing was over, he congratulated the women, you see, on having won the franchise. And one woman looked at him and she said, you're nothing but a hypocrite. And he said, no, I'm a politician. I always side with the winning side.